5 and 9 is what? 14 years. I have looked at thousands upon thousands upon thousands of losing races, and I have seen what people do. They put in horses that have no chance, and they rob the horses that do have a chance of their rightful rankings, their rightful position. You can look at the fractions and see when a horse doesn't belong in there, for gosh sakes. How many of you have synergism? Okay, synergism gives you the dream race over the fractions of the contenders. Phase 3, he always did that. Fractions himself. If one horse has a 61st fraction and a 57.39 second fraction and a 52.83rd fraction, do you want to leave in a horse that has a 58 first fraction, a 52 second fraction, and a 49.8 third fraction? I mean, if that horse beats you, folks, there's no way you're going to ever get him, but you stick him in there, and one of those might tilt the balance from a horse that really belongs. Look to see if they possibly match up in those raw fractions that you put in phase 3 or those adjusted fractions under the dream race in synergism. Get rid of that horse. Scratch it out. Learn to see what cannot win, and don't put it in to begin with. And the best way to do that is never put in a horse off a zero race. If you're going to put him in off a zero race, he better run against times that are extremely fast. So try to take him always off a plus or a plus within an O. And learn to use those pluses within an O. Learn to see form cycle from them. Dick's going to go over it with it in complete definition. So when you find your third choices and your fourth choices winning, that is, by my experience of correcting races for 14 years, that is the reason. Playing two horses is the greatest salvation anybody has. How many of you said, I sure can't bring myself to bet two horses? That seems like betting against myself. Darling, that is a fantasy. What you want to do is, on paper, or really make some bets. Bet 20 races, just betting one horse. Bet those same 20 races, betting two horses. If you're playing the Kelly criterion, two horses makes you far more money. One man's reasoning was, if I win 35% with one horse, that's as good as winning 70% with two. No, sir, it is not. That's mathematically. But what happens to your own psyche? What happens to any of us when we lose four in a row? How many people in this room can honestly state that after losing four in a row, you handicap with the same emotional equanimity that you do when you only lose one in a row? Anybody honestly say that? Now you put your finger on, well, we bet two horses. If you change your handicapping style, if you deviate, if you zig and zag after a loss and you get all tight in the belly and loose in the head, you're going nowhere. But if you can hold your consecutive losses down, never losing more than three in a row, then you'll almost always handicap with the same equanimity that you would if you were solidly winning all the time. It's the answer. It's not the mathematics. It's just what it does for you. Now, I do know some people who can go 14 and 17 in a row. They write books about it. Barry Meadow wrote a book, said, well, you sometimes will go for months in a row without winning. Don't let that worry you. All us professionals do that. Well, the guy's got to be dingy to talk like that. I mean, what kind of a masochist is going to go 14 and 17 in a row and lose and then say that all us big shots do that? That's ridiculous. Four in a row is tragedy. Jimmy Bradshaw and I, first time in 8 years, lost three in a row in Omaha one day. It brought back old memories about when we were both starting. And we said, well, Jimmy, this nonsense is going to stop. And we laughed. We thought it was funny. So we won the next race. But three in a row is about all you should ever let yourself go. And I tell everybody this. After you lose three in a row, get your fanny home and start analyzing or call us or send us the races. Don't torture yourself. If you lost three in a row and you don't know why, you're in trouble. If you lost three in a row and you do know why and you can correct it, then stay on. But if you look at it and say, I don't know why I lost those races, you better go home. I have no use for a guy who walks up to me and says, oh, $7,000 with your method. I'm going to win eight in a row. I said, I told you to go home after three. Why didn't you? Why did you say that? Yeah, he did. He didn't want to hear that. All human beings get a certain perverse pleasure out of failure, out of losing. And if you don't believe that you get a little pleasure out of it, then you are a very rare individual. The one thing we've got going against us, all of us, is the fact, which, why did I have to hide this treatment I was giving to these convicts? From society, from the judge, from the organization. If they know what I was doing with these people, they'd have drummed me out of the core. I'd have been up for the biggest reprimand in the world. Of course, now I go to the American Psychiatric Council's meetings and preach this stuff. They let me go because they know that my sessions will be attended by everybody. Because all the guys that I'm taking pot shots, I've come in to hear what I'm doing. So, you know, if you're the adversary, if you're the alternative, all the mainstream people will come and hear you just to see what you're up to. But there will never be in our lifetime a psychological procedure that is not opposed to gambling per se, that doesn't say abstinence is the only cure. Now, I think it is to discredit the medical and psychological profession that they prescribe abstinence. There are certain people who are really compulsive, really sick, who need, A, to have their compulsions treated, not the manifestation of the compulsion, which is gambling. Gambling is not, there's no such thing as a compulsive gambler. There are compulsives. And gambling is one of the easiest ways to manifest a compulsion because it's convenient. And besides, it has a label. And if you know anything about psychopaths, they always want to get in on something. You know, with Pete Rose and everything, all the psychopathic gamblers are celebrities. I am a pathological gambler, George J. Boy, I'm just like Pete Rose. I'm a hero. The world's paying attention to me now. There are no pathological gamblers. There are pathological people. And treating it with abstinence is ridiculous. Every psychologist or psychiatrist had a couple of years of school, and they're supposed to have a little more than that, knows damn well that it's been proven that gambling and risk-taking throughout the centuries has almost been an instinct. There is no social culture from the Aborigines to the present who's had not evidenced ritualistic gambling activity. It's as natural as anything else we do in this world. Now picture this same group of psychiatrists and psychologists who prescribe abstinence for your gambling problem. Now you go to them, husband and wife, with a sexual problem. Do you think these guys would preach abstinence? They'd get drummed out of the core. What's the difference between having a sexual problem and having a gambling problem? Both of them are life forms of eros, the manifestation of the life will. Oh no, they wouldn't say abstinence for a sexual problem because, hey, there's a lot of money to be had in curing these sexual problems. Gamblers are all broke anyway, so why treat them? Just say, don't do it. The guys are absolute, total hypocrites. Does anybody doubt that they're absolute, total hypocrites, that they're purveying criminal advice as opposed to trying to do something about it? And they will do so from now on. There's little lack. In fact, they're even getting worse. Now they're trying to find a chemical, biochemical substrates that cause gambling. Same thing that causes kamikaze pilots, SWAT teams, United States Marines, risk takers, Wall Street geniuses. That same chemical is in every successful person, that driving chemical, whatever they call it. And if you don't have it, you're a wimp. So what they're going to do is they're going to give you a counter-injection to make all gamblers wimps. And if they get the law passed, your wife or your husband or your mother or your cousins, they get a couple of psychiatrists together, they can send you to the loony bin and inject you with this stuff so you'll never take a risk again.
Yeah.
You know, that's what you'll be. And that's how far these people have gone. So, and why are they getting away with it? Because society agrees with them. Mamas agree with them and preachers agree with them. You'll meet one tonight who doesn't, but most preachers agree with them and society agrees with them that gambling is evil. Gambling is a waste. And all gamblers lose. Anybody in this room who didn't get that message from society or their parents or from somebody, there can always be one in every room that I believe, but when I see two, I know one of them's a liar. All of us have had that message throughout our life. Now, the first message, all gamblers, gambling is evil, gambling's a waste. We ignore that, as we do most primary messages. But when they say all gamblers lose, that's great. That just gives us an out. So whether our mama is alive or dead, we go out and we gamble and we lose and say, look, Mom, you were right. See, I'm not a bad boy. I lost, like you told me. So that's why most people lose. That's why they can't keep their gambling money. That's why they're scared to bet enough to really make a living, because we have a sociologically ingrained desire to fail at the races or any gambling event. In the heat of the event, we don't sense that we have that failure. We sense that failure after we lose. We sense it and we start having remorse and regret. Let me just, before we bring Dick on, paint a picture to you. When 6 weeks ago, 8 weeks ago, 9 weeks ago, when you went to the track, how many of you truly expected to win? Truly went to the track knowing you were going to win. All right. Well, hoping, but it all depends whether that hope was accompanied by, I'm going to win today. I figure I'm going to get $20. No, the reverse was true. You went to the track and said, I'll take $50. That's not going to take my wife to dinner. It costs that much. And you said, I'm not going to lose more than this today. You went expecting to lose, knowing full well you're going to lose. When a win came about, what happened? That wonderful emotional exhilaration, that almost euphorious wildness when you won because it was going against your expectation. So every win was a joyous and memorable, highly emotionally charged event. Correct? Now let's turn the coin around and we go to the track fully expecting to win. I certainly do. Most of you do. Dick Schmidt certainly does. And suddenly, with that win expectation, we start to win, and then suddenly, boom, we lose. Now what's our reaction to a loss? It's exactly the same reaction we formerly had to a win. It becomes overly charged with emotion. It becomes those heights we experienced before with a win. Now with a loss, we reach the depths, and suddenly our entire psychological makeup is changed. When you feel that happening to you, get the heck out of there. Or go in for a dollar with somebody or something on a couple of races if you have to stay. Once you have reached the depths of depression and are emotionally charged by your failure, only failure can follow. You must handicap with equanimity. How many of you found that taking this method in your computer, when you're at home in the quietude of your own bedroom, you win on paper? Let's put it this way. How many don't win on paper in the quietude of their own bedroom? Virtually everybody does. Now, here's something you got to think about. Here's the fallacy of what you read in books. Yeah, it works on paper, but it doesn't work at the track. That is bull hockey, folks. If it works on paper and you didn't know who was going to win and you predicted the winner, it works. Why it doesn't work at the track is that you're not in the same ego state when you get to the track as you were in the quietude of your own home. In your own home, you have no nagging anxieties. You're not really doing anything evil. You're like a SAC general at Omaha analyzing the position of the warheads. You're doing a noble Edisonian type of invention and behavior. It's scientific. Because you're not putting any money on it, and you're not involved with the evil of the track. So you pick your winners that way in what we call an adult ego state. Your mind is adult, has no child, adapted child naggings from, has no parental warped messages involved, it's fine. Now you go to the track, and the first thing you do, you walk in, the guys are huckstering this and that, and people are saying, I got a tip from Joe on the backstretch, and he knows how about it. He shovels more of that stuff than most people do, and he says it's almost, and you hear all this stuff. And the anxiety caused by the ambience of a racetrack or even an off-track betting book makes you change your decision-making process, and you walk up the window to bet the 2 and the 3, and somebody says, hey, look at the 4, he dropped from 12-1 to 2-1. The other guy says, yeah, that's Charlie's horse, and I know the jockey real well, and he says his horses are locked today. And you suddenly, not even realizing it, find that you're betting on the 4 horse. What I suggest is for every one of you, especially to start out, if you start out right, if you start out thinking properly, if you start out with the right mental attitude, then everything else will fall into line. You will no longer protest the words in the manuals. You'll no longer say this is too hard or this guy's a nut or you will then, your mind will be open and free to analyze what is really a very simple, simply written manual. People who have read these manuals who have no vested interest in making the work say they're well written. Because they don't give a damn, they're not challenging their frame of reference. The reason you don't like it or you block at some of the things it says is because it's challenging your frame of reference, what you believe in now. We must, if we're going to be winners, adapt to winning mental attitudes. You cannot win with a loser's attitude. You cannot win with a mainstream attitude because the mainstream does not win. Tom Asley started writing in 1969. I don't have anything against these guys. They did their job. They're writing for mass media. Asley wrote, Quirin wrote, Quinn wrote, Beyer wrote, Mitchell wrote. Do you think there is one more winner in the world today as a result of their having written those books? One more net winner? I very seriously doubt it. They might have made a few people winners who took them seriously and followed them, but they also made a lot of people losers who misinterpreted what they said. You can misinterpret those books and really go to pot. So you're going to get plenty of nuts and bolts about the methodology, but I'm dwelling on this because I know, and Dick knows, and every winner knows, this is the most important aspect. Opening your mind, cleansing it, so that you can do precisely, when a betting situation arises, what you can do in the privacy of your own home. That you are in control of your emotions because you believe that handicapping is a noble profession. That you have no nagging doubts. That you don't hide your racing form under a Wall Street Journal. That you would hide your Wall Street Journal under a racing form, if anything. I lost $750,000 in the stock market. I lost $3,000 at racing in all my life. You've got to believe that you can do it. You've got to understand that horse racing is the cleanest form of endeavor we have going for us in North America. You talk about fixes, you talk about jockeys and crooks and dopes and stuff, okay. What percentage of the race are you supposed to lose? 30%, right? Attribute all your fears and suspicions of conspiracy and trainer manipulations and games and crookedness to the 30% you lose. If you can win 70%, consistently, and so many of our people do, then 70% of those damn races must be on the up and up. Or you can do like Paul Mellis told Michael Pozzola. Michael said, is there a fixed? How come I'm winning so much? Because you're betting on the fixed horses.